Raven's Veil is a dark fantasy horror anthology podcast that may contain explicit language and thematic elements not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Raven's Veil, a dark fantasy horror anthology podcast set in the shadowy world of the Deep South, a convergent reality situated around what most of humanity has accepted as reality. Obscured from human eyes, Raven's Veil is a mystical sanctuary intended to preserve the existence of its immortal inhabitants. The Makori, commonly referred to as witches, have been hunted since before written history. The witches of the highlands fled persecution to a new land that would come to be known as Appalachia. In these parts, you should always be leery of the things that scare witches. The veil is thin tonight, family. Let's see what darkness lies beyond.
Well, hey there, family. We're so glad you're here with us tonight. Well, this is the last episode of season one, and this season finale marks a milestone for the Raven's Veil universe. This season, we've gotten acquainted with Miss Sybil Ashford and the rest of the gang as Sybil discovered who she was and, moreover, who she was not. In the last episode, Palmer Ashford made a declaration of war on the malevolent witch-hunting demon Vrock Crossell. So if you all are ready, we'll just get going on with it. So settle down, family, and listen up. Let me tell you all what happened to Miss Sybil this time. The morning after, Palmer Ashford convened a conclave of the Coven of Covens so he could issue a call to arms for the Makori to once and for all deal with the problem of the witch-hunting demon that plagued his people. He looked out the window of his study just as the early morning sun crested over the top of the lush green rolling hills that formed the valley where the haven of Raven's Veil stood. Its golden rays glistened off the highest point of the Makori Temple, a towering spire that reached upward towards the heavens. The temple rose as a beacon at the center of Raven's Veil. It was an ancient monument dedicated to wisdom and magic that had been built by the Makori centuries ago when they had escaped persecution during the witch trials. The spire sparkled like a jewel, symbolizing hope and safety for all Makori. In the background, he could hear Ruby Bee yelling,
"Sybil! It's time to get up, child! Lord, young'un, you're gonna sleep your life away. I've got breakfast ready, and it's getting cold. Come on, hurry now. This biscuits and gravy ain't gonna eat itself. Your daddy will be waiting on you."
Now, in order for you to understand what happened next, we need to go back a couple hours. It was just before the crack of dawn, while the Makori slept peacefully in their beds. In a deep, dark part of the forest, a few miles away from the protective wards of Raven's Veil, where no human or Makori had been, a large gray wolf stood silent and motionless. The forest was dark and silent, except for the occasional rustle of leaves. The full moon cast a pale light over the forest, but its cold, distant light could only barely penetrate the thick canopy of the trees. Only a few beams of silvery light managed to reach the forest floor, creating patches of dim illumination among the shadows. Eerie shadows danced all over the clearing, seeming to have a consciousness of their own. The air was strangely cool and damp, and the ground was covered with rotten leaves, twigs, and moss. The trees were ancient, their branches twisted and gnarled as if they were eternally in pain and agony. His large eyes were the same sickening yellow color as the demon Vrock Crossell, who stood to his side as a dark, towering figure. A sliver of moonlight broke through, shining on the wolf's face, exposing its imposing form. Although the light was faint and fleeting, it was enough to reveal his malevolent form. His coat was thick, matted, and gray, with silvery tips that reflected the light and he had a black patch on his chest. His muscles were tense and powerful and ready to spring into action. His face was calm, cold, and fierce, showing no fear or hesitation. His muzzle was long and narrow, exposing large teeth that could tear flesh and break bone. His large eyes were the same sickening yellow color as the demon Vrock Corsell, who stood on his left as a dark, towering figure. Vrock wore a dark cloak that covered his entire body. His body was strong, although it appeared broken and worn. His head was a grotesque fusion of something that resembled a human and a raven. He had gaunt cheekbones and hollow eye sockets. The viscous, milky fluid of his eyes were burnished by a rancid yellow glow. Oily black feathers covered the skin of his menacingly elongated face that jutted out in a deranged, curving beak shape. The demon exuded an aura of dread and malice. Its appearance was a terrifying testament to the unnatural magnificence of absolute evil. His limbs were a mix of both malformed arms and hands and twisted and broken feathered wings. His skin was made of deathly gray scales and etched with repulsive veins of midnight blue, a vestige of the raven's once beautiful dark plumage. A low, deep growl broke the silence coming from the wolf's throat and echoing through the stillness of the early morning. It began as a bassy, guttural, and menacing rumble of raw power and primal fury that seemed to rise from the very depths of the creature's being, a clear warning of the creature's malevolent nature. Slowly, as if fog was seeping up from the ground, a mist began to take shape. The creature seemed to be born from the very shadows themselves. Its form was like black smoke, a swirling nebulous mass that was both solid and insubstantial at the same time. The head of this creature was that of a stag, haunting and regal. Its antlers, sharp and jagged, were like warped branches of a tree reaching for the sky. The eyes were empty voids that seemed to gaze into your soul and suck out your very life. The body of this ancient creature was somewhat akin to a man, but it was wrapped in a cloak of complete blackness. The cloak absorbed every speck of light, making the creature appear as a blacker silhouette against the black backdrop of the dark forest. It moved with a grace that belied its monstrous form, each step silent and purposeful. Its mere presence sparked terror in Vrock Corsell. So much so, his usual cruel smirk was replaced by a grimace of pure dread, leaving him cowering and paralyzed in fear. Imagine an ancient creature so old and powerful that even the demons and the darkest of things trembled in its very presence. Now multiply that times 100, and you get this thing. The forest was silent, and time stood still. There wasn't a sound, as if the creature had forbade the wind to blow, or the animals and insects to make a sound. In an inhuman voice filled with malice and casual cruelty, sounding like scraping stones, the creature startlingly whispered,
"What confers on ya the honor of summoning me from the depths of slumber, demon?"
Vrock could not speak. He bowed his head as low as he possibly could, averting his eyes. The ancient creature stirred, causing the ground to shake violently, and then he whispered,
"Speak quick now and choose your words prudently, for my patience is as thin as the veil between our worlds."
Without warning, Vrock was hurled upward, his face only inches away from the creature. Vrock comprehended that the creature could obliterate his existence, nervously pulled himself together, and spoke slowly and reverently.
Oh, my servants, Weaver of Time, I, Rock Grossel, Lord Visser of the Void, acknowledge your formidable power and beg your indulgence. I entreat and beseech you to lend me your ear. I promise to honor any conditions you set forth and to respect your decision, whether it be in my favor or not. I understand the grave nature of this action and do not undertake it lightly.
In a harsh and guttural voice that sounded rough as sandpaper, grating on your nerves and filling the air with an oppressive sense of dread, Seraphax whispered,
"What care I for the concerns of those of your realm? I know why you have come. I know what you plan to do. If I grant your desire, your existence is forfeit to me for all time. But I cannot give you what you desire directly, for what you desire, the destruction that you seek to bring, is under the protection of another, and I will not break the covenant we made ages ago. But I might, for a price, a steep price, be able to help you in a way."
Hey there, family. It's Kristen Newby, the voice of Sybil. We wanted to tell you about a very special company called Memory Alchemist. Memory Alchemist is an enchanting company that creates unique small batch hand-poured candles, wax melts, and room sprays. Say goodbye to candles that cause allergies or fill your space with unwanted pollutants. Memory Alchemist candles are crafted with the utmost care using high-end coconut and apricot wax blends and the cleanest fragrance oils. Breathe in the captivating scents without worrying about respiratory issues. But we're not just talking about fragrance. Memory Alchemist candles are adorned with exquisite graphics that perfectly match each scent, telling a unique story. It's a delightful blend of sight, scent, and imagination. Light up your world with Memory Alchemist. Discover the art of scent and storytelling. The scent of imagination. You can visit the Memory Alchemist website at www.memoryalchemist.com and tell them Ravenzale sent you.
Now we need to double back to Palmer's study. The study was on the top floor of the home that she assumed was his home. It was a comfortable and welcoming room at the top of the stairs. The study was Palmer's sanctuary of knowledge and wisdom. The walls were adorned with massive bookshelves reaching from the floor to ceiling, holding countless volumes of ancient tomes, their spines worn with age. A plush armchair sat by the crackling fire, inviting you to sink into its embrace. Nearby, a wooden desk, cluttered with parchment and fountain pen, stood as a testament to Palmer's relentless pursuit of arcane wisdom. Sybil softly knocked at the door of her father's study and waited. She heard some noise coming from inside as the door opened and Palmer said,
"Well, good morning, Sybil. How'd you sleep?"
"Not good."
Palmer stepped to the side so Sybil could enter the study. The morning sun glistened off the various magical trinkets and baubles laying about on the tables. As Sybil looked around, she noticed a carefully arranged altar adorned with elegant crystals, incense, and an elaborately framed photo of her mama. She turned to Palmer, looking plum tuckered out, and said,
"I tossed and turned all night thinking about that demon and what you said last night about me being the way."
Palmer gestured for Sybil to follow him to the other side of the study, where a hidden alcove disguised by a bookshelf stood swung out. Sybil imagined that when it was closed, it would completely obscure the large magical workshop that lay beyond the door. As Sybil entered the workshop, A strange wave of arcane energy washed over her, sending shivers down her spine. The room was dimly lit, with flickering candles casting long shadows on the wall. Air was thick with the scent of herbs and incense, creating an intoxicating atmosphere. The workshop was a treasure trove of arcane artifacts and mystical tools. Shelves lined the walls filled with dusty spell books and ancient grimoires, mystical scrolls, and vials containing rare ingredients. Each item seemed to hold a story of its own, whispering secrets of almost forgotten rituals and forbidden knowledge. In the center of the room, a large table hewn from a single massive hawthorn tree stood as the focal point, its surface scrawled with carvings depicting intricate symbols and sigils. Wide-eyed, Sybil turned slowly to her father, and a very small, shaky voice asked,
"Are you sure it's me, Daddy?"
"Yes, Sybil. There's no mistake."
I'm afraid I can't do this. What if I mess up?
Sybil, my sweet child, my baby girl, you have always been such a source of pride and joy for me since you were born. Your mama would be so proud of you. When you were born, we knew you were different. Nadira came to bless you, and she told us then that your magic would be unmatched. You inherited your magic from your mother and I, and for that I am truly grateful. Sybil, you are so powerful, more powerful than you can know. Our magic is a blessing, a gift, but it's also a curse. If you weren't Makori, the demon wouldn't be trying to kill you. We created Raven's Veil to escape the persecution. You're our only chance, Sybil. We've been trying for hundreds of years, but the best we could do is drive him away for a little while. Vrock Krosel is the most vile and wicked creature that ever existed. His only joy in life is the total annihilation of our kind. He's the one that killed your mother. He's the one that killed your grandparents. He's the one that killed Ruby and Lucy, and he's coming after you. He senses your magic, and he knows that you are the only one who can stop him. He's gotta fear you, and he hates you. Until he brutally murders every Makori, wiping us from existence, he won't stop.
They stood in silence for a long while as Palmer gazed blankly at the table in the middle of the room. An unusual sound came from the study, breaking the silence. Palmer blinked and looked around as a man's voice with a thick Scottish accent called out from the other room.
"Palmer, it's Jude. Where the hell are you, my friend? And where is me bonnie goddaughter that has come home, I hear?"
Sybil looked at her father with questioning eyes. Palmer looked at Sybil, smiled, and then chuckled under his breath, whispering,
"Always perfect timing."
Palmer hollered towards the study.
"We're in here, you old coot. It's about time you showed up."
"Damn, you look scattered."
The two men gave each other great big old bear hugs, and then Palmer said,
"Thank you for coming, brother. Sybil, this is your godfather, Jude. He's my oldest and best friend in the whole world. He's agreed to help teach you how to wield your magic."
"Oh, my sweet little Sybil is all grown up. What a lovely lassie you've become."
Sybil blushed and said,
"It's good to meet you, sir. Thank you for agreeing to help me."
Politely cutting her off in a playful manner, Jude insisted,
"We'll have none of that nonsense. Call me Uncle Judy. It's my job to teach you. I'm your proper godda. My oh my, it's been too long."
"Yes, sir. I mean, Uncle Judy. Thank you."
The three of them retired to the study and sat down ready to begin Sybil's lesson. Just as Palmer said,
"Sybil, Jude here is the prefect of the Sun Ascension."
Loudly, a bell began to ring. Palmer and Jude looked at each other, and Palmer looked to Sybil and said,
"Come, something's wrong."
Both Palmer and Jude stood on each side of Sybil with their hands on her shoulder and the three glinted to the temple as the wolf's howl echoed through Ravensvale. Hysterically, people glinted into the temple left and right, some carrying wounded, some carrying dead Macquarie. The moon and earth sentient Macquarie magically tended to the wounded, working together seamlessly like a well-oiled machine. A few survivors began to frantically explain to Palmer what had happened. A group of Earth Ascension witches had gathered in a cleared field to perform a ritual before the planting. Suddenly, a huge gray wolf ran out of the forest and lunged at the nearest witch, ripping her throat out with its fangs. The other witches with her screamed and tried to fight back with their magic, but the wolf was too fast. All of their attacks were thwarted by some unknown magic. One by one, the wolf slaughtered six Macquarie, leaving only a trail of carnage. Their screams alerted others nearby, and it was them that raised the alarm bell. When the last Macquarie were safe in the temple, Palmer looked at the bodies of the witches lying on the ground, all bloody and broken. Anger rose in him.
How did this happen? It isn't possible.
Aunt Ruby B ran to the front of the temple, where just the night before, Palmer had called for war on the demon. She began looking at the broken bodies and slowly waving her wand over them. Sybil whispered to her daddy.
What's she doing, Daddy? Is she gonna bring him back to life?
Palmer looked sadly at his daughter and said,
No, baby. That's beyond even Nadira's power. She's using True Sight, a rare and powerful spell that allows one to perceive the flow and manipulation of magic in the world.
Aunt Ruby B blinked at first, not understanding what she was seeing, and then she gasped loudly, emerging from the spell. She stumbled back, feeling dizzy and disoriented, but Jude's strong arms caught her before she fell. Palmer rushed to Ruby B's side and asked,
What is it, Ruby B? What did you see?
It was Brock Crossell. Somehow. He shouldn't have been able to get past our wards. He shouldn't have been able to possess that poor beast. And something else. He had old magic. Older than demons, or humans, or the Macquarie. Magic from an ancient one. But I don't understand.
Palmer looked at Ruby B and asked,
Are you sure? It's still here, I can feel it. Did you see enough to build a solution ward?
Yeah, I can do it. Palmer, we have to stop that wolf.
Jude, you take Riverside. Ruby B, you look around here in Gardenside. I'll take Mountainside.
Sybil ran to Palmer and asked,
What do you want me to do?
Stay here. You are not equipped to go out hunting. One day this will be your fight, but that is not today.
As soon as the three glinted out, Sybil took off. Despite what her father said, she believed this was her fight. She needed to be a part of this hunt. She didn't know Ravensvale very well, but it seemed that all roads led back to the temple. Hurriedly, she jogged down street after street. After minutes of turning down a half dozen roads, she realized just how big Ravensvale actually was. She was getting turned around and couldn't tell how far away from the temple she'd gone. Then, she rounded a corner and came face to face with the largest wolf she had ever seen. She couldn't believe that a wolf could look her in the eyes. She was taller than most of the men in Hemlock Holler, and here she was looking eye to eye with the meanest wolf she had ever seen. The wolf lunged at Sybil, knocking her to the ground with its powerful body. She felt its teeth sink into her shoulder, drawing blood and crushing her bones. She screamed and struggled, but the wolf was too strong and heavy for her to push off. She was hopelessly pinned beneath him. She looked into his eyes and saw a cruel intelligence behind them. The wolf opened its blood-drenched mouth and spoke in an all too familiar raspy voice of the demon.
Little, it's time to put you out of your misery. You thought you could escape me, but I know where you've been since the day you left the house. You are mine now, and I will make you suffer before I end your pathetic life.
Sybil felt a strange surge of fear and despair. It had been childish for her to go out on her own. Sybil screamed,
"Get off me!"
Without warning, the wolf was forcefully hurled back into a nearby wall. The wall shattered under the force of the wolf's impact. Aunt Ruby Bee came running from up the street and slid to a stop right in front of the wolf's crumpled form. Almost immediately, Palmer and Jude rounded the other corner just in time to see Sybil vanish into thin air with a crack of thunder. Screaming orders, Palmer directed,
"Ruby Bee, follow Sybil. Check the temple first. Jude, help me bind the wolf until we can destroy it."
Sybil lay in the center of the pentacle, barely conscious and partially submerged beneath the silvery water, now being stained by the deep crimson-red blood seeping from her wounded shoulder. Her breathing was shallow. Lucy and Ruby appeared as Aunt Ruby Bee glinted into the temple. Dumbfounded at the sight of the girls, Aunt Ruby Bee let the twins lead her to Sybil's injured body. As Aunt Ruby Bee knelt beside her in the water, and she saw a single tear slowly roll down Sybil's blood-stained cheek. Well, alrighty, family. That's it for this episode and for this season. We're mighty glad you joined us tonight, but honestly, it's way past my bedtime, and y'all gotta get. If you like what you've heard in this episode, make sure you tune in to our next episode in May as Miss Sybil finds out just what she's capable of. In April, while we're on hiatus, we've planned a very special season recap for you, so make sure you don't miss it. Now, family, you adults have a few chores to do. Go on over to ravensvale.com and see about doing your chores on social media. Follow us on all the social media platforms that we've made available just for you folks. Like, listen, subscribe, and follow wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you don't mind, leave us a good rating and a kind comment. You can find the Ravensvale Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. If you haven't already, just search for Ravensvale Podcast. And again, make sure you hit that follow button to stay up to date with our latest episodes. Oh, and tell a friend about us, won't you? So until next time, family, see you soon.
The Ravensvale Podcast is a production of Small Raven Media. Today's story was written, directed, and narrated by Ed Boldengreer. The voice of Sybil Ashford was performed by Krista Newby. The voice of Aunt Ruby Bee Atworth was performed by Lena Perkins. The voices of Palmer Ashford and Seraphix were performed by Jordan Walker. The voices of Rock Corsell and Jude Grieger were performed by Jared Boldengreer. Audio engineering and sound design by Nick Devan at Nikki D Sound. Copyrighted 2024 Small Raven Media. All rights reserved.